Welcome to today's edition of Time in the Vineyard with pastor teacher Jeff Torring. Today's broadcast is being brought to you from the pulpit of Liberty Valley Church, Northfield, Ohio.
Joshua in chapter 1 and verse 1. Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that I have given unto you, as I said unto Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous. Here what we're entering into is a transfer in the book of Joshua. We have left the first five books of Moses, and now we are entering into what we are learned recently as the time of the Jew. So we taught through Daniel, and we learned thoroughly what it was when the times of the Gentiles came in. Now in the book of Joshua, when we do this, we're entering into what is known as the time of the Jew. The nation of Israel is about to become a nation, but not just any nation. They're about to become the superpower of the world. They are going to be the focal point, the center of attention out of all the nations that are on the entire planet. So this time of the Jew that commences here at the time of Joshua lasts about 900 years until finally then Babylon comes and besieges them and takes it away. So just short of a millennium, we're looking at about a 900-year run for the nation. Now, if you look at history, most nations don't last that long. Most nations last a couple hundred years only before another nation eventually will come and destroy them and take them over. Now, do the math. When we were established, 1776, your days are numbered. Maybe. Depending, really, on what we do with the Lord. And so, what we're doing is we're looking at the transition from the Torah to history. So if I can apply this to our days, because we have heard of models and data to the point of nauseam, if you're paying attention. The experts have said that this is the model, and we get the models from the data. Experts. Let me just explain something that all of us know that seems to be common sense among the masses, yet no one seems to be saying it, but everyone is thinking it. If you have an expert that you hire, and the expert, because the models and the data we have learned are 30 to 70% off. I mean, they're wrong. Now, if you have a business and you are a CEO and you hired a COO, and your COO developed projections and models and data that was 30 to 70% off, you would fire him. Now, I work on cars. And so if someone brings their Porsche in that has been slammed at 70 miles an hour, and I fix the frame about 70%, I mean, the doors don't really open all the way, but they still open, you would say, I am not going to go to him to fix my car. The models are ruined by the experts. Now, we pay them. That's their job. Their only job is to do what they're to do, and they're that far off. What we're seeing here in this book before us, all the pages before Joshua are the data, the training, the Torah, the laws. That is the data. Now when we make the transition into Joshua, we're going to see the models. First five books of Moses is the data, and now we're going to see, because the data says, if you do this, then this. This, then this. If you obey and you believe, then this. If you don't, then this. We're going to see now the actual models come to play in the book of Joshua, and on for the next 900 years. Now, what's interesting when we do this, and I just want to pull this out before we leave the book of Joshua, we know that Joshua is commenced into taking the nation. They are going to take the promised land. This is what Joshua the book is about. What's interesting though, and to apply it to our day, he says in verse 6, be strong and of a good courage. And he repeats it again in verse 7. Only be thou strong and very courageous. Why does he say that? Because they're afraid. They have no training in war whatsoever. They've come out of Egypt as slaves. They know nothing but being a slave. They're not trained in archery. They're not trained in hand-to-hand combat. They have absolutely no military training whatsoever. But we're about to invade the land of the Hittites, the Canaanites, who are nasty people. The giants actually live there. They're afraid. Well, let's think of that for a minute. You ever have anybody that you know is afraid? And then you tell them, well, don't be afraid. Well, that's helpful. Thanks a lot. Well, be courageous. When you're afraid, if you're afraid, you're afraid. Somebody coming you to tell you to be brave isn't going to help you. Give me a gun. Give me an arrow. Give me a sword. That might help. But just to say, well, be courageous, actually will irritate people, doesn't it? That's not helpful. Yet that's what God is doing. So in our land, we have people who are afraid. I mean, I saw an old timer driving down the road the other day. He had a mask on in his car. I'm like, dude, you're in your car. There ain't nobody else in the car with you. You don't need your mask on. There's nobody else breathing in your car. Why would you do that? Because he's so afraid. He's afraid. That's where we find ourselves here. They're told to do something, and they're afraid. So just to say, well, you should just be brave, actually is just going to irritate people. But that's what God says. And God offends people, actually, quite often, doesn't he? Jesus even offended people because they don't want to hear the truth. This that took place here, these orders that were given before. So let's just get some history in it into Numbers chapter 27 and look at the way that this played out. Let's actually now dive into some of the data that is before us. Numbers 27. We know that this same kind of text has taken place before. The marching orders were already given. Numbers 27. Look at it in verse 12. And the Lord said unto Moses, get thee up unto the Mount Abarim, and see the land which I have given unto the children of Israel. Now this is probably one of the most tender verses in Scripture that I have ever come across. I remember the first time that I heard this. I was in Bible college in a little preaching class, a chapel service, and the preacher stood up and this brought me to tears. This is the most touching place in Scripture, except for probably when Joseph meets his family. Moses, you're going to die. But before you do, come up top this mountain and let me show you the promised land. You're not getting in. But let me just show it to you before you go. Verse 13, and when thou hast seen it, thou also shalt be gathered unto thy people, and as Aaron thy brother was gathered, you're going to pass on to glory. And he, of course, Moses is reminded why. Because in his heart, he's like, can't you just let me go? You know, like a normal child to his father. I know I've done something wrong, but can't you just make an exception and let me go in? I mean, I have walked around this thing for 40 years for you. Couldn't, maybe. And so God reminds him, no, verse 14, because you rebelled against my commandment in the desert of Zin, in the strife of the congregation, to sanctify me at the water before their eyes. That is the water of Meribah and Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. And you can almost hear Moses groan or sigh. Man, if I could only go back to that day. What's interesting, though, is how Moses responds. Look at it in 15. And Moses spake unto the Lord, saying. Now, that is an interesting verse. I mean, really think of that. It's as if it's this nonchalant, you know. Oh, yeah, and verse 15, Moses spake unto the Lord, saying. Moses speaks freely with God himself. He's not just a higher power. He's not just a force that's above in the heavens. He's not the old man upstairs. This is the creator God, Jehovah, who is an all-consuming fire, the one who stood at the brink of nothing and by his own voice created all things. And Moses just speaks freely with him. He responds. Look at it. Moses, you're not allowed in because of what you did. I know. But God, the God of spirits, verse 16, of all flesh. Now, look at this. This isn't a question. This is a statement. Moses is close enough with God that he can feel comfortable enough to tell God what to do. It's not a question. It's a statement. Let the Lord thy God, the God of spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation. This is Moses' idea that he's telling God, but it's consistent with biblical models. We're looking into the data, which we know because we've seen the models pan out. This is consistent. We know that Moses isn't off kilter when he makes this statement. Now, you would say to yourself, why do we need to have a man over the congregation? Why? Aren't the people smart enough to roll on their own? Do we need an elitist section of people over the country to tell us what to do? No. I mean, the average person's smart enough what to do. Are they not capable enough then? Yes and no. As far as the capabilities go, it's yes and no. Now, what he is saying is I need a leader, a man over the congregation. Now, a lot of people will say that they don't need a church. They don't need it. Now, some people then will go as far as saying, well, the church is not the building anyway, so we don't need to attend there. And I think they're either in a rebellious state or they're just uneducated. Probably a little bit of both, but I would say they're just not educated. Because what they'll say is, well, the church is the people, ecclesia. But they don't realize that's the sheep. There's a difference between the sheep and the fold. The sheep are out on the land doing their thing. Yeah, there's the independent people, there's the sheep. But then you have to come together, there's what's known of as the flock. Now, the flock is not the same as the sheep. The sheep are out 1, 2, 3 all by themselves in danger on the hill. But when you come into the flock now is actually the church. It's not just individuals. They make the mistake where 2 or 3 are gathered in my name. There I am also in the midst of them. You took that out of context, brothers. And I don't want to get into a church polity and teaching that. But what I'm saying here is that because Moses agrees, we can't just let the sheep go on their own, God. We need to set a man over the congregation. And we know that God does it, so we know that he's actually speaking the right thing. Now, the part about the capableness is that what he is saying now is we need to be organized. Out there on the field, the sheep are by themselves. They're in danger. But if you organize, now we are in the fold, we are much safer. So the church needs to be organized. We need to have a flock. Now, I got into a conversation just recently with a gentleman concerning the church and a couple other things. He's far left. He says we definitely need socialist medicine. I think he's a brother, which is very interesting. He says, we need socialist medicine. I said, okay. And so I made something very interesting statement to him. And I said, all right, okay. Let's talk in love. Would you please consider in your thinking originally what hospitals were? Think of all the old hospitals. St. Alexis. St. Jude. St. Thomas. Mary Mount. Originally, the hospitals were religious. Now, they were Catholic churches mostly, but they were actually ran, for the most part, by the church. Now, I don't want to get into the doctrine and all those things. But just notice that it was religiously run. You had a bunch of nuns as nurses volunteering their time. And it worked beautifully through a lot of years. I mean, years and years and years and years and years. Foreign countries, missionaries, nurses and nuns, all these people sent missionaries out as nurses helping medicinally for free or for donation, because we're helping people because generally we genuinely help people. We care for somebody who's hurting, and so we're not in it for the money. And of course, we know times have changed because hospitals now are not being named after saints, which I don't agree with, but you see what I'm getting at. So I pulled up the 990 for the Cleveland Clinic. You know, a 990, a nonprofit organization, pulled in $6 billion in 1 year. $6 billion. After paying everybody, all the researchers, the CFO, the CAO, all the administrator people who are much smarter than me, who have letters after their name, who make a ton of money. The doctors who make a ton of money. And we all know the truth is that the nurses actually do the most work and make the least amount of money. After the whole year is done, they took in over $6 billion. Now, this is just the Cleveland Clinic. This is not UH. This is not SUMA. This is not all the... This is just the Cleveland Clinic, $6 billion. After it was all done, they had a surplus of $440 million. Seems like nothing compared to $6 billion. Where does that money go? If you had the love of the Lord your God in your heart and you loved your brother as yourself, the two commandments, you would always run in the red, actually. Because if you genuinely care, some of these people you wouldn't even charge. And we all know people who have been in the hospitals who do not get the care that they need because the insurance said no. Why do I say all that? Because we need a man over the congregation. We have to have an organized something in order to accomplish a purpose as big as taking the promised land. You cannot take the promised land with 10 people. Now, I'm not talking about being ecumenical or anything like that. I'm talking about independent churches. So what he is saying now, and by the way, we're going to get into this because you're saying, aren't you off kilter a little bit? No, I'm getting ahead of myself, because if you follow on through the models, we have what is known of eventually, and when we get into that promised land, is the city of refuge. And the city of refuge is run by religious, by the priests, and that's where the medical comes from. So I'm just getting a little ahead of myself as introductory, but this is what's taking place. We need a man over the congregation. Now look what he says. God set a man over the congregation, which may go out before them, and which may go in before them, which may lead them out, which may bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord be not as sheep which have no shepherd. We just learned that last week for Easter. If you smite the shepherd, the sheep will scatter. You see, this is perfect data. This isn't Burks or you know, this is perfect data. We know for sure. And the Lord said unto Moses, take thee Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, somebody who loves the Lord, and lay thine hand upon him. Now I have to stop here and just put a parenthetical. We have to think generationally, because Joshua just doesn't come on the scene. Joshua has been the minister for Moses for 40 years. This kid has, he was a kid when he got started, and now he's ready to take the command. We have to be doing that. We have to take the kids who are 12, 13 years old right now and prepare them so in 10 years they can stand behind this box and preach the word of God faithfully. Because we're just a remnant. That's why we're the only churches that are open. The government didn't even tell us to close. Why would you close? Because I'm afraid. And the Word of God tells us, don't be afraid. Now, what's interesting is he says, now, take this Joshua that you already know. He's got the spirit. He's got experience. He's ready for the position. But look what he does. He says, set him before Eleazar, the priest, and before all the congregation, and give him a charge in their sight. We want to do something. We're going to magnify Joshua in their sight. Look 20. It says, and thou shalt put some of thine honor upon him. Honor is a word that's not used very much anymore. It used to be an honorable thing to be in the military. It used to be an honorable thing to serve in Congress. It used to be an honorable position to be the president. Now, people do not honor even the office of the presidency. Even the people on our president's own party are trying to undermine him. Now, the people elected him. Now, this isn't about right or left. This is the office of the presidency. If you don't like him, wait 8 years or 4 years. But we need to have honor for our president, because that is whom we elected. You cannot undermine him at every step. Now listen to this, how this goes. Because a lot of people, they just don't honor anymore. So when we built this building, it was a shoestring ragtag couple of dudes who didn't know what we were doing. We were just the blind leaders of the blind, but somehow, some way, the Lord was gracious and he let us build this. When we were building the floor, just the floor here, the concrete, some of you were here, some of you weren't, and some of you should have been here, but you weren't. It was a 90-some degree day, blistering heat, not a cloud in the sky, because there's never a cloud in the sky over this property when it's 95 degrees. It just never comes around. I don't know, water don't come around. It's like being in the wilderness of Zin. I mean, we're all dying a slow, miserable death. So we're pouring concrete for this floor. We're way understaffed. We've got a couple people who are volunteers. And listen to what happened. This is very interesting. We hired a few professionals, finishers. I got a laugh from a guy who pours concrete. Yeah, have you heard that or not? During which, the concrete is, we're just starting to lose it a little bit because it's so hot and we don't really know what we're doing all the way. There's something called a power trowel, something that you just drive around and it smooths the concrete up. 4 to 5 of the guys came up to me and said, the guy that you got leading it, I don't think he knows what he's doing. We need to have another power trowel here. We're going to lose this. You're going to lose it all. Some of them were actually saying it like that. We're 90-some degrees out. We're aggravated. This tar. We're sweating like dogs. I'm already sunburned, and it's only 9 in the morning. You are going to lose this project. I said, the boss said, no, we don't need it. He goes, well, I'm telling you he's wrong. Now another guy, I'm telling you he's wrong. I said, okay. He said, you need to get us another power trowel. And I said, the boss said no. Now, I'm not stupid. So listen to what I did. This is just biblical wisdom. Pay attention to the data. This isn't my own smarts, believe me. It's just because of biblical wisdom. So I called Kelly over and I said, all right, bud, load up the truck and go rent a power trowel. But don't let anybody see it. Park it over in the next yard and hide it. And if something goes wrong, the cavalry will come. But if it don't, we're not going to dishonor the man in charge. He said we don't need it. He is in charge. We are not going to dishonor him in front of all these people. Now, if we need it, we're going to pull it up, which we actually did. Not because we needed to, actually, because the only one we had broke. So I said, and then everyone's yelling at me. It's a fuel mutiny. Everyone is yelling. It's going to come to blows. I said, no, it's all good. We have one. He goes, what? By the time we drive, I go, he's backing it up, unloading the new power trail. We are not to undermine them. We are to prop each other up. We're not to just beat one another and eat our own. We are to be there in case something does go wrong so that we can honor them and help each other. That's how we're supposed to do this. Because people are afraid. So he says you have to honor them. Now the truth is we've been here before in this, because we remember when the spies came to the promised land, and if you just look over to Numbers 13 and we'll hurry and close, turn just a few pages back and we see basically the same thing come out. Now again, we're looking at perfect data. Numbers 13, we know the story. The spies are sent out to spy the promised land. They're like, wow, man, the fruit here is absolutely astounding. I mean, it's the land of milk and honey. The grapes are like gigundous. Verse 26, and they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran and to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. Holy cow! But it's going to turn a little. Verse 27, and they told him and said, we came unto the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and their cities are walled and very great, and moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. These guys are giants. Warriors from their youth. Men of war from their youth. And we don't even have a gun. The mob mentality is about to set in. Look at 29. And the Amalekites, they dwell in the land. Oh, somebody else pipes up and says, oh, and don't forget the Hittites, they dwell in the land. Oh, and the Jebusites. Oh, and also the Amorites dwell in the mountains. Those guys are nasty. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea. They have a full-blown navy. And by the coast of Jordan. Now there's an uproar, because you can see in verse 30, Caleb, look, stilled the people before Moses. They're becoming violent. It's becoming a riot. Caleb, the young guy, out of nowhere, comes and stills the people. Let's settle down a little bit. We can do this, because God said so. I know you're afraid, and I know it looks bad, but God said not to be afraid. Look at chapter 14, verse 1. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried. And the people wept that night. They are so afraid. Grown men are crying in front of their wives. I saw my father cry one time. And I was crushed. But I can't believe my eyes. I didn't think the dude ever did that. Because he never did that I knew of. That's the scene here. They are so afraid, grown men are crying in front of their women. And in fact, in 2, and all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron and the whole congregation. They're not honoring each other. They're not propping each other up. We got the knives out and we're stabbing each other. It's like Republicans and Democrats. They said to him, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt. Do you know what you just said? Or would God we had died in the wilderness. It gets worse. Look at verse 3. And wherefore hath the Lord brought us unto the land to fall by the sword? Now look, that our wives and our children should be a prey? The men are so afraid and so cowardice that they're going to blame it on the wives and children. We cannot take this land because I have to protect my family. You realize every single one of those wives died in the wilderness? Everyone. And the children lived 40 years of misery. You want to protect your family? Stick to the data. Because the models will not be wrong. Be men. Be of good courage. Of very good courage. Defend your wives. Defend your children. Don't use them as an excuse. Because they did that, they all died. The people that they tried to save actually died. And I know that you are all hearing the words of Jesus Christ. He who loses his life for my sake shall find it. It gets worse. Look at the mentality of what's happening. Were it not better for us to return to Egypt? Wouldn't it be better if we were slaves? They're looking to give up their freedom. Benjamin Franklin said, "He who sacrifices freedom for safety deserves neither." We will not sacrifice our liberties for safety. Women have died for this country since 1776. We took on the crown to get away from slavery and tyranny, and we are not going to allow the government to do it to us now. As long as we are brave and take very good courage and stick together. For also Ben Franklin said, "Brothers, we best hang together, or we will certainly hang together." So Moses and Aaron, they fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation and the children of Israel. And they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. But 40 years later, with the new generation, they learned that the data and the models were accurate. Because 40 years later, Joshua takes the promised land. But what good is it if you profit all this and lose your own soul? Bow the knee to Jesus Christ, the one and only King who died for you. If you only believe, repent, and believe. Because the promised land is coming. And we're all going to get into the fight of our lives. And it's called death. And none of us have ever won. Except for those who believe in Jesus Christ. We all win.
You've been listening to Time in the Vineyard with pastor-teacher Jeff Toring. Today's broadcast was brought to you from the pulpit of Liberty Valley Church, Northfield, Ohio. For more information, you can call the church at 330-554-7606 or check us out on the web at libertyvalleychurch.org. That's libertyvalleychurch.org.